Welcome to the Voices of Women Physicians podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Tatiana Resnik, a practicing physician and a certified life coach. You will hear about inspirational journeys and practical tips from amazing women physician experts, as well as effective coaching and steps in your mindset. Welcome everyone to this episode of Voices of Women Physicians podcast. I have a wonderful guest with us today, and I invited her to this podcast because I was really impressed after listening to her webinar about sleep and supplements. We all need sleep, and not everybody wants to use medications. So can supplements help? Are there any holistic ways to get better sleep? And now I have an expert to talk about it. So I'm happy to introduce to you Dr. Nishi Bhopal. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Tatiana. Thank you for having me.
Please tell us a little bit about yourself and about what you do.
Sure. So I'm a board-certified sleep medicine physician, and I'm also an integrative psychiatrist. I have a private practice in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's called Pacific Integrative Psychiatry, and we see patients by telehealth all across the state of California, and we help them with anxiety, depression, and sleep issues. And then I also have an online platform. It's called IntraBalance, and I teach physicians, therapists, and other healthcare practitioners all about integrative clinical sleep medicine. And I really came into that because so many of us don't get trained in sleep medicine. Doctors only get about 2 hours of sleep medicine education during medical school, but all of our patients have to sleep, right? And so I was getting questions over and over again from my colleagues about clinical sleep medicine and how to support their patients and even about their own sleep. So then I started putting together videos on YouTube about how to support your patients. And then that is now a program called the Clinical Sleep Kit, where, yeah, we have like a great community and lots of resources and learning on different aspects of sleep. So those are the two main things that I do.
This is so helpful, and so many patients need it. All of us practicing physicians always get questions about sleep. It's one of the most common questions, really, from patients. It is perfect. So let's talk about holistic approaches to sleep. What holistic treatments are actually evidence-based for insomnia?
Yeah, it's such a great question because when it comes to insomnia, there's so many different things that can be done. And oftentimes as physicians, we think about medication or we think about CBTI, which is cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. And both of those have a role. CBTI is actually the first line gold standard treatment for insomnia as recommended by the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. So there's a great role for that. And then medications as needed. But often what happens is either personally or if you're working with patients, you want to know what else can be done. So from a holistic standpoint, there's loads and loads of different kinds of options. And actually, you had Dr. Valerie Cacho on your podcast, and she edited the Integrative Sleep Medicine textbook. So for anyone who wants to go deep into integrative sleep medicine, I recommend that book. But a few things that I recommend starting with. One is nutrition. This is something that is often overlooked when it comes to sleep. But there is a role for nutrition and gut health in optimizing sleep quality. And there's different reasons for this. One of this is because nutrition and the timing of our meals affects circadian rhythms. And the circadian rhythm or body clock is important for sleep regulation. So thinking about the timing of meals is really important. But also the types of food are shown to have an impact on sleep quality. So for example, people who eat a diet that is lower in dietary fiber tend to have more sleep disruptions versus people who eat a more high fiber diet are shown to have more slow wave or deep sleep. Now, the evidence on this is still emerging. We still need a lot of research. The research is still in its infancy when it comes to nutrition and sleep. But it's just really interesting to look at that. And also people who eat more sugar tend to have more sleep disruptions. So this is an easy thing that a lot of people can just start to play with and notice how it affects you, how the timing of meals affects you. And also thinking about gut health in this category, because melatonin is produced in the gut as well as in the pineal gland, right? So when we think about melatonin, usually as physicians, we're thinking about the pineal gland secretion, but there's 400 times more melatonin in the gut than there is in the pineal gland. Now, the functions of melatonin produced in the gut, maybe it's more than sleep. Melatonin has lots of other aspects in anti-inflammatory effects and antioxidant effects and so on. But thinking about gut health is really important. So that's the first category that I think of holistically, and there is evidence for that. The second big category I think about is supplements. So this goes hand in hand with the nutrition piece because supplements are not a replacement for healthy lifestyle, but they can be really supportive. And I think of supplements in two broad buckets. One bucket is Are we treating a nutritional deficiency or insufficiency? So if someone has iron deficiency, vitamin D deficiency, B12 deficiency, these kinds of things, we can supplement deficiencies in those areas. But there's also supplements that can be used to help calm the nervous system and help reduce hyperarousal, which feeds into issues with insomnia. And again, there's loads of different supplements that can be used for sleep, but a few of those that are evidence-based are lavender. I like to use that one a lot. It's helpful for people with anxiety too. Ashwagandha is another one, which is an adaptogen. It helps regulate the nervous system. And then another one I use a lot in my practice is called L-theanine. And this is an amino acid that's really calming. It's not sedating though, so it can be taken during the day. So that was the second big category. I'll take a pause there before I go into the third category if you want me to elaborate on anything or if you have any questions.
Yes, if you could tell a little more about supplements.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mentioned these three: lavender, L-theanine, ashwagandha. So when it comes to using supplements, either for yourself or for a patient, you want to be careful about a few things. One is the quality of the supplement. So I do recommend, if you're going to use a supplement, that it should be through a third-party tested brand. There's different companies that offer third-party testing. And the reason this is so important is because you want to make sure that what you're taking is actually what it says on the label. And there was a couple of studies that came out recently on melatonin supplements showing that over-the-counter melatonin supplements often didn't even contain what they said was in the bottle. So there was great variability in the dosing. So for example, anywhere from like, I think it was like -70 or 80% up to 400% of what it said on the label was actually what was in the supplement, or it didn't even have melatonin in them. It had other things like CBD, serotonin. So this is why the quality is so important.
CBD instead of melatonin.
It's pretty scary, right?
That's scary.
Yeah, and people give melatonin to their kids, especially in the form of gummies, and gummies have their own issues. So quality, again, is really, really important. The other thing is making sure there's no drug interactions or that it's not going to exacerbate other issues, because just because something is natural, it doesn't mean that it's safe. So there's a great resource that I like. It's through the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. They have an About Herbs website. And if you go on there, it's a directory and you can look up different herbs and supplements, and it'll give you the data, drug interactions, medical issues to look out for, metabolism, and resources, like different references you can look at. So I highly recommend exploring that for people who are interested in looking into supplements.
Can you repeat the name of this? Is it Memorial Cancer Center?
Yeah, so it's Memorial Sloan Kettering or the MSK About Herbs app or website. So they've got an app you can download, and then you can also just go on their web-based platform.
Oh, it's very, very helpful resource. And which brands do you personally trust when you use or recommend supplements for sleep?
Yeah, so it really depends on the supplement. There's lots of different brands, and I have different brands that I like for different products. So for melatonin, for example, I really like Herbatonin. So it's like Herbatonin, and it's a plant-based melatonin. I think it's the only plant-based melatonin on the market, as far as I know. And it comes in the lower doses that I like to use. So 0.3 milligrams and 3 milligrams. So it comes in those two dose forms in a capsule. And I personally use that when I do use melatonin. I use the Herbatonin brand. And it's really interesting because I feel like, even though it's such a low dose, I do feel like, well, first of all, it's third-party tested. And I do feel like it's more concentrated. I feel like it's stronger than if I take just a normal melatonin that I found at Target, for example. So that's an example of a brand. There's other ones that I like for ashwagandha. I like Banyan Botanicals. Daya Herbs is good as well. VPK is another brand. So I'm not affiliated with any of these brands, but they're just ones that I personally use and recommend to my patients. But you can use a platform like Fullscript, which is a professional grade supplement platform. So you can use that as a practitioner. And most of the supplements on there are third party tested. And then you can also get a discount that you can pass along to your patients. So that's a resource that I like to use.
It is very helpful. It is wonderful. And on your webinar, you have a wonderful webinar. And I learned that for melatonin specifically, bigger dose, not necessarily better dose, right? Like 10 milligram, like many patients ask, oh, it's too little, give me more. But actually, it doesn't really add that much when you increase.
It's exactly right. And for the purposes of sleep, usually 0.3 milligrams, 0.5 milligrams, up to 5 milligrams is generally what we would use for sleep-related support, whether it's circadian regulation or we're helping somebody with sleep optimization. Melatonin is not really indicated for insomnia, but in some cases, there is a role for it. It's also used for kids, especially kids with autism and ADHD. There's a role for it there. But a lot of patients are taking like 10 milligrams, 20 milligrams. I've even seen people taking 30, 50. 50, 60 milligrams. And there is a role for higher doses as well in specific conditions like REM behavior disorder. We might use those higher doses. There's also a role for the higher doses in non-sleep related conditions. So for like COVID, they were using it post-COVID. There's research on cancer for the anti-inflammatory effects. So there is a role for those higher doses. But when it comes to sleep, I usually stay within that 0.3 to 2 milligram range or 3 milligram range for most of my patients.
It is very helpful. And I would like now to ask about how to deal with middle of the night awakenings.
Yes, this is such a common issue. Okay, so there's a few things to think about here. So if you're waking up in the middle of the night, first thing I tell people is that it's normal to wake up in the middle of the night. I think there's this myth that once you fall asleep, you should be asleep for 8 hours straight without any disturbance and then be out cold basically until the morning. And sleep doesn't actually work that way. We go through different stages during our sleep. We go from lighter stages into deep sleep and then REM sleep. And it is normal to have several awakenings throughout the night, usually after a sleep cycle, which is about 90 to 120 minutes, there's a brief awakening. So it's completely normal. And it's actually thought that that might be a safety mechanism. So from an evolutionary standpoint, maybe that's what protected us. Like we would wake up briefly, make sure there's no intruders, there's not a lion about to attack village or something like this, right? So it's normal to have these brief awakenings. So that's number one. However, they can become problematic if people are either waking up for prolonged periods of time and they can't get back to sleep, or if they're starting to feel anxious about them, because that can feed into the cycle of hyperarousal and then increase more of the awakenings. So a few things that I recommend, one from a behavioral standpoint, is to actually reduce the amount of time spent in bed. One of the mistakes that I see people making is that they're spending way too much time in bed and the brain can only generate so many hours of sleep. So if you're spending, for example, 10 hours in bed, but you're only sleeping for seven, that's a sleep efficiency of 70%. And so you're going to have more fragmented sleep as a result. So actually reducing the time in bed in cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, this is called sleep restriction. I don't really like that name because we're not restricting sleep, we're just restricting time in bed. So time in bed restriction is one thing that can help. The other is another strategy, which is called stimulus control, which is if you're waking up and you're feeling anxious, what usually happens for people who worried about these awakenings is they look at the clock and then they're like, oh my gosh, I only have 3 hours left. I'm not going to be able to sleep. I'm going to be so tired tomorrow. So it creates more anxiety, or they're tossing and turning. And so now the brain learns to associate the bed with being frustrated and having insomnia. So we want to break that association by getting out of the bed. Then if those things aren't helping, okay, now what do you do? I've tried all these things. It's not working. Then we want to look at the root causes. What's actually causing these awakenings? Is there drops in blood sugar that could be causing them? So again, going back to the nutrition thing we were talking about at the beginning, timing of meals. Is there some other sleep disorder like obstructive sleep apnea? Are you waking up because your brain's not getting enough oxygen at night? Is it because of periodic limb movements or is something else going on? Is there a medical issue? So then we really want to dig into the root causes there.
Yes, those are common things that look like insomnia, but often misdiagnosed, right? If you could tell a little more about those.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues that can look like insomnia. And so this is something that I really like to emphasize to people, that just because someone is struggling with insomnia, it doesn't mean that it's actually insomnia. We want to look under the hood a little bit to see what might be going on here. So there's three main conditions that I recommend to any physician. If you're seeing patients who have insomnia, have these on your radar. And these three things are obstructive sleep apnea, restless leg syndrome, and circadian rhythm disorders. These can all look just like insomnia. And especially in women, insomnia is more common in women. And in women, sometimes these conditions are not thought about even by other sleep doctors, right? So especially obstructive sleep apnea in women, it can show up in a much more subtle way. It can show up with symptoms of fatigue, of difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep. It can look like fibromyalgia. People might have aches and pains. They might have depressed mood. They might get diagnosed with depression or anxiety. So it can be this very subtle picture versus the classic symptoms that we think of the male with the 17-inch neck and loud snoring and gasping arousals. In women, it can look very different. So we want to have obstructive sleep apnea as a differential diagnosis for insomnia. Have that on your radar. The other one I mentioned was restless leg syndrome, which can look like sleep onset insomnia, where people have trouble getting comfortable. They have this urge to move their legs or wiggle their toes, or they might feel like they're jumping out of their skin and their there's this general sense of discomfort that usually comes on like clockwork in the evening, and it can cause issues with sleep onset. So that can get easily misdiagnosed as sleep onset insomnia. And then the other one I mentioned was circadian rhythm disorders. And I see this one come up a lot in my practice, where someone might have a body clock that's just on the later side, and they might want to go to bed earlier, but they can't fall asleep until later in the evening. So a classic example of this is your teenager who can't fall asleep before 2 a.m. and then they can't wake up before noon. So this can happen in adults as well. And I've seen this time and again be misdiagnosed as sleep onset insomnia, but you dig a little bit deeper and then it turns out it's circadian rhythm misalignment, and it goes the other way as well. So that was called delayed sleep phase. The other aspect is called advanced sleep phase, where people wake up too early. So that can get misdiagnosed as early morning awakenings or sleep maintenance insomnia.
How do you fix it? Especially, I think it's so common in young people, in teenagers, and in adults too, like when they go to sleep too late.
Yeah, that's such a great question. And there's behavioral strategies that can be used, particularly with light exposure, and then use of that low dose melatonin that I was talking about. So that 0.3 or 0.5 milligram dose. And there's a strategic plan that you can give to patients or even for yourself. Like, I'm a little bit on the delayed side, so I even do this for myself too, where you actually gradually, very slowly start to shift the circadian rhythm. It's easier to do when you have a block of time off. So for teenagers or people in school, then holidays, like summer holiday, Christmas vacation, those are really an ideal time to do this, because when you're in school or working, it's hard to do this. But generally, the way it's done is you gradually shift your wake up time, get bright light exposure at that time, and then you gradually dose the low dose melatonin earlier in the evening in accordance as you shift the wake time. And you can use bright light therapy. And so there's different strategies around that that can be done. And you can absolutely treat it without medication.
This is so interesting. Wonderful, very helpful information. So if you could tell a little bit more about your program to our listeners, if they want to connect and to learn more, how can they reach you?
Sure. Yes. So you can find me on YouTube at Intra Balance, I-N-T-R-A Balance. You can check out my YouTube channel, and I've got information on my clinical sleep kit program, which is going to be opening up again in June 2024 for healthcare practitioners, physicians, and therapists. I've got information about that on my YouTube channel. You can also get on my newsletter that way. And then for people who want to work with my team one-on-one in California, we also have some patients in Washington State as well that we can see. You can go to our website, which is pacificintegrativepsych.com.
Thank you so much. It was so informative. It was so interesting interview. And this concludes the first part of our interview. And next week, we will hear a second part, and we will go in more details about very important parts of dealing with sleep. Stay tuned. Thank you for listening to my podcast. If you enjoyed it or found it helpful, please subscribe, leave a 5-star review, and share it with a friend. Have any topics you'd like covered? Send me an email at joyfulsuccessliving@gmail.com. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram to connect at joyfulsuccessliving. Have an amazing week. See you next time. The Voices of Women Physicians podcast is for entertainment purposes only, and does not provide any medical, financial, tax, legal, or psychological services or advice. You are responsible for your own well-being, decisions, and results. Dr. Resnick is a practicing physician, but Voices of Women Physicians podcast is not reflective of the opinion of her employer. You should always contact a professional if you have any specific questions about your unique situation.